So, my name is Susan Roger. I'm a psychologist and work in the schools and with teachers, and I'm here with Kathy.
Hi.
And we're going to talk to you today about stress, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So stress is a word that we hear often. It's part of our everyday vocabulary and often a word that's associated only with being overwhelmed or not coping well. But what happens if we look at both sides, the negative parts and the benefits, not just the problems related to stress? Because stress is really our body's signal that something isn't right. When we're driving and someone passes us at a really high rate of speed, we feel stressed because dangerous driving is a real threat to our safety. When we get nervous at the thought of writing an exam or making a presentation, we feel stressed because we want to do well and present ourselves as capable and competent. When we lose someone very important to us because they've died, we recognize the reason we grieve is because that relationship is a very important part of our lives and who we are. These are all typical and normal stress experiences, and they compel us to change the way we act or behave. We drive defensively, we study and practice, we attend to our relationships, making time for communication, sharing good times, and remembering. Stress, though, is a very individual experience. What one person finds stressful and another may not. And I'm wondering, Kathy, if you can think of any examples in your own life, in your role as a teacher, where you've experienced stress.
I won't list all of them or we'll be here all day, but I will tell you when I first became aware that I needed to do something differently. I will tell you that I was teaching grade 5 at the time. I can remember this as if it was yesterday. I was doing my master's part-time. I had 2 young children. My husband had just been diagnosed with a chronic illness, and my mother had just been diagnosed, and we had been told she had a couple of months to live. And so clearly there were stresses in my life, but rather than either acknowledge that or do something about it, I just tried to function even more productively than I had been in the past. And I can remember standing at the front of my class. I was writing something on the blackboard. It was the very beginning of the class. The students had just come in and were sitting down. And I suddenly got extremely hot and thought, I'm going to throw up or pass out. I remember feeling weak. I remember feeling my heart pounding as if it was coming out of my chest. And I just made my way slowly to the door and told the students just to relax for a minute. I walked out into the hallway in slow motion, closed the door, and I literally got down on the terrazzo flooring because it was cold. And I thought, what is happening to me? Mm-hmm. A colleague of mine who was teaching in a classroom close to mine, he was at the front of his room, which positioned him to see me on the floor outside of my classroom and to instantly react to that.
Right.
So he closed the door and came out and, you know, came immediately over to me to see what was going on. Called the vice principal up, who helped him get me into a little office that was up there. The vice principal's mother had just passed away, having had a stroke, and he was quite convinced I was having a stroke. So they got quite concerned, and they called my doctor's office, and he said, bring her over. And the secretary drove me to the doctor's office, where I continued to feel unwell for quite a while, actually, before it subsided. And when he checked me over, he said to me, you know, I think this was a panic attack. Your heart's fine. You seem fine. What's going on in your life? And it was the first time that he had forced me, or anyone had forced me to sort of talk about all of the things that were taking place, even myself. And I remember going back to the school feeling incredibly embarrassed because there had been so much worry and concern about whether I was having a stroke, and it turned out to be this thing called a panic attack, which I'd never had before.
Right. Didn't know anything, wasn't really a real thing.
No, well, I
didn't feel legitimate.
Well, exactly. I mean, clearly it wasn't as serious as everyone was concerned. And I somehow saw it as a weakness. And I remember being in tears in the principal's office and deciding to tell him what the doctor had said. And he smiled and told me that that I would find over my career that many people experienced that kind of stress in this profession, and that I was certainly not the first, and that I was in good company in his office. And that was huge for me because, I mean, his own acknowledgement of the fact that he experienced stress perhaps at that level made me think like I was going to be okay, first of all. But it was also a big wake up that I needed to make some changes and not try to be superwoman in every area of my life.
Yeah. And so, and when I hear you describing that, I mean, from a psychological and physiological point of view, you can see the things that are happening there for you in that moment. So that feeling of being overwhelmed, that signal to your body that something needs to change, right? So you walk out of the room, you're on sensory overload, you talk about it slowing down and then sinking down to that cold floor, because we'll often try for a tactile experience when we're in that moment. So that feeling of the cold floor is that kind of shock that you need to feel grounded, to feel like you're not just going to float away, right? And that whole experience of creating that self-stigma that you should be superwoman, that you should be able to handle all of these things, and how the thing that helps deal with that is a caring doctor, a caring colleague or leader who says, you know, this is what it is, and it is something that we all share. So those reactions really are so helpful, and they're the ones we're afraid that we're never going to get, because this isn't really, we're not able to label it as a real thing.
No, and I remember, you know, after that conversation in his office, and of course it spread through the staff room quite quickly that this experience had happened. So people were, you know, thoughtfully coming up and asking me how I was, and I kept trying to find the courage to tell them that I was fine and that it had turned out to be a panic attack, and then I would look at them to see what's this person's reaction going to be like. And more and more I found that people either hadn't heard of it before or had a similar, if not the same experience, certainly had an experience where they had stress overload and you know, needed to pay attention to what their body was telling them. That was just my first.
And it's such a great illustration, and thanks so much for sharing, because I think we're not always willing to talk about these moments when we're vulnerable, and stress can make people very vulnerable. So it's really important. And I think that the way that we react to stress really comes from our own experience and what we've learned. You know, we learn as women, I think particularly, that we should be able to handle all of these things, that we should be able to keep everything together and be the strong one. And it becomes overwhelming, and then we doubt ourselves, right? So it is, some of these things are learned, and they're learned very well. Stress can be healthy when it is something that compels us to learn and to change. And in your case, perhaps you learned that you needed to pay attention to your body and not expect so much of yourself. Stress can be tolerable when we have ways of coping. So having a strong, caring circle of support around us that we know that we can say these things out loud and we can expect some support, or we can at least not be judged too harshly. But I think the other kind of stress that is important to talk about, particularly when we're talking about children and youth, is toxic stress. Mm-hmm. And this is the one that creates so much difficulty for so many people. And if you or anybody you know has grown up in a family where there's violence, then you might know that where the person has no power, the world can be a very dangerous place. And when you grow up in a house where violence happens, you learn to duck and run. Mm-hmm. And for some kids, this means spacing out or going away in their mind when something is threatening. Only by detaching themselves from the current reality can they tolerate a dangerous situation. And when faced with danger, and this danger could come in the form of, you know, being asked to stand up and read in the classroom, mm-hmm. or perform in some way, kids can often appear to be daydreaming or be bored. If you learn to run from danger, then you avoid. And that avoidance of a stressful situation can come in the form of physical, so stomach pains or headaches or things that keep them away or out of harm's reach. It can appear as being totally devoted to something else. So becoming the best athlete, the best student, the most devoted volunteer. But what they're doing is they're avoiding that very dangerous or stressful situation. It can also appear in children and youth as being very aggressive. So fighting back, being defiant in the face of authority, or pushing others away. So have you noticed some of the teaching situations that you see children responding to stress very differently?
Absolutely. I am thinking of one school, because while you were talking, I actually was thinking about the leadership in a particular school, mm-hmm. and I'll talk about that in maybe a minute. But I do recall having children who were very anxious and stressed by testing that was going to occur. Okay. And so as the testing scenario was set up, those were the children who would lose their pencil, whose desk contents seemed to spill out onto the floor, who suddenly needed to be in the washroom or created some other form of disruption in the classroom with some perhaps hope of being removed.
Right. And did it seem to you that like these kinds of things were out of proportion with what you were trying to get them to do?
I would have to say that knowing the children well and knowing the anxiety that was occurring in relation to the testing that was being done, I wasn't surprised. Okay. I had seen that pattern of behavior with them often enough that I knew that it was related to what was happening, because it wasn't something that occurred on a regular basis. So it was, I think, their way of showing me that this was not something that they were happy to be doing, right. and that they somehow felt that this was not going to be a good experience for them. And in some cases, you know, we were able to change the conditions for test taking in a way that we could take the student out of the room, for example, and have an opportunity to talk about stress and testing with them before having them write the test, so that we acknowledged what was going on here. But that wasn't always possible.
Right. And I think the, you know, one of the really important things that stands out to me there is you knew your students well enough. You could anticipate, you could see it when it was happening. You could see their behavior and understand it. Perhaps you didn't know exactly what was going on, because as teachers, we don't often know all the details, but we do see the behavior, which is a child's way of reaching out. Children often won't be telling us what they're feeling, but they'll be showing us mm-hmm. what they're feeling with that behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when you think about some of the steps that you took to help the kids deal with this situation that was stressful for them, do you think these are things that you were able to fold into your classroom practice? Did you have to interrupt things or change things drastically?
No, not at all. I mean, it was not uncommon for us to have seating in the classroom that included, small tables mm-hmm. at the back of a room, mm-hmm. for example. And we would have quiet and personal conversations with certain students and say, I'm going to get the class started and then you and I will go and sit at the back for a moment.
Okay.
And I would make arrangements with a resource teacher, for example, to see whether that time was appropriate mm-hmm. for the student to perhaps go into a quieter room mm-hmm. and to just have some supportive conversation before they started. So we had a really flexible and collegial group of people that we were working with, and they were only too happy to support these kids. So it wasn't a difficult thing to do at all.
That's great. And what I also hear you saying is that there was sort of this shared sense of problem solving mm-hmm. going on.
Yes.
So how are we going to create the conditions for these children who are struggling? And I think that's so important. I mean, whenever we have a child experiencing some stress in the classroom, and whether we see them, withdrawing mm-hmm. and spacing out or getting aggressive or becoming inappropriately active in another way, I think the first thing, to think about is doing that safety scan. So looking at, so do we have physical danger here? Mm-hmm. Is there something that we need to react to immediately to ensure physical safety? And if there's not, then we can shift from that protection and intervention to bearing witness and listening mm-hmm. and allowing some problem solving, some shared problem solving to happen. Because often if we intervene right away, if we see a student who's upset or who's withdrawn, we remove the student from the problem-solving exercise. So to build capacity, we want students to be aware, we want ourselves to be aware mm-hmm. of what's going on, mm-hmm. and then start thinking about how we build the skills and the capacities in the other to help them cope with it. Mm-hmm. And I think, the last time we talked about this, you said to me, if we jump in too soon, we rob them of that struggle. Mm-hmm. And that struggle is the thing that they learn from. So having that faith that together we can problem solve and come up with ways that will help. I think it's helpful to encourage students to use I messages. Mm-hmm. So what are you feeling? What's going on for you right mm-hmm. now? Can you help me understand how I can help you?
Mm-hmm.
And then being a little bit patient with that, because this is, it's a difficult moment because we want to jump in and fix it.
It is. And I think one of the things that I learned to do was goal setting with the students to recognize, okay, these are the things that are happening. And these are the kinds of ways that we would like things to happen. So how can we get from here to there?
Right.
And then to do it one at a time.
Yes.
So, there's going to be a lot of tests throughout the year or assignments or situations mm-hmm. where a student can feel less than. And so we had identified those together, but we didn't expect change to happen in all of those areas all at once. We said, all right, let's take step one. Let's focus on this one today and practice that until we feel good about it. And then let's go back to our goal sheet and see, are they still all the same goals? Is there another one we can try now? And so working on it in a way that allowed them to feel good about what they were doing mm-hmm. in stages rather right. than trying to accomplish all of them at once.
Right. And building that sense of capacity mm-hmm. that they can build towards mm-hmm. success is so important, because if those experiences just keep on being so stressful that they're completely overwhelming, mm-hmm. then you're going to see students doing more of the avoidance, more of the withdrawing, more of the aggressive behavior mm-hmm. so that they don't have to cope with that mm-hmm. actual stressful situation. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you can, I think, easily do is help students take a moment mm-hmm. In that, let me know, we're going to talk about this test, we're going to stop, we're going to breathe, we're going to focus, we're going to pause, mm-hmm. right? And it's that green light, yellow light, red light. So green means go, I'm good to go. But when I'm feeling yellow, I need mm-hmm. to stop and I need to breathe. And when things get overwhelming and I see red, I need to let the teacher know. I need to reach out and use my stress coping tricks, my strategies that I've developed together with my teacher, mm-hmm. which may be going to a separate room or mm-hmm. or having that extra mm-hmm. time. So those are all great ideas for helping students cope with stress. The key words for this particular unit would be student safety, stress, capacity building, and strategies.